This podcast is sponsored by Underdog. Want to make money making picks on MLB games? Then you have to try Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. In Underdog's Pick'em game, you just pick your favorite baseball players and predict whether they will go higher or lower on stats like strikeouts, hits, and more. Pick to 2 to 5 players, get all your picks right, and you can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Be sure to sign up with the promo code PITCHERLIST and Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100 so you have some bonus cash to start playing with. Again, that's Underdog Fantasy. Fantasy.com or Underdog Fantasy in the App Store. Sign up with promo code PITCHERLIST and get your first deposit doubled up to $100. Must be 18 or older, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, 21 or older in Massachusetts and Arizona, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. In New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY. In Tennessee, call 1-800-889-9789.
Welcome to another episode of In the Pen, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. I'm your host, Callan L. Slager, and today, as always, I am joined by my friends Jake Crumpler and Rick Graham. Guys, thank you for holding a fort down for me last week while I had a little bit of an absence, but it's good to be back. And like you see, last week you guys talked about the players we were right about. So, of course, I'm going to come in and put a little damper on the show, and we're going to recap some of the guys we were wrong about going into season and go through the process and just see if there's any takeaways we can take towards the 2024 season or the offseason as we start prepping for next year. But it's fantasy playoff time. How's your playoffs going?
They're going. I'm actually doing, I somehow, as I was just talking about the Pitcherless Legacy League, I somehow snuck into the sixth spot and I'm, you know, in the semifinals right now, looking pretty good to make another finals appearance. So that's going well. And, you know, the one big money league I'm in my home league, I'm still in that too. So it's actually, you know, both teams kind of snuck in sixth place, but all that matters is in head to head leagues, all that matters is the playoffs, right? I guess.
Yeah. I mean, the PL staff league's the only league that I have playoffs in. Everything else is either full season points league or a roto league, so not super worried about it, especially in the staff the consolation bracket. So fighting for seventh place or something, yeah, and not something I'm super worried about. But you know, doing well in my season long leagues, especially the 15 teamers on the NFBC platform, so I feel good about that, even though my little brother is going to beat me in our home league by quite a decent amount. I'm going to lose a pretty large sum of money.
Losing to your brother is never good. I take it from someone who's lost to my brother in some fantasy matchups in the past, and it's not fun. He will not let me hear the end of it. I'm still alive in my two main home leagues, league with friends, buddies from high school and some people from college, in the semifinals, battling for a championship spot. So it's the fun time of the season, and you know, like I said, we're always looking out to try and get you that advantage. But like I said, this week we're going to talk about some of the guys we're wrong about. But there was an interesting week on the injury front in the middle of September, so we'll start off there. We lost a couple closers to some injuries. The first one is Adbert Alzolay. He was placed on the 15-day IL with a strained right forearm. It's extremely disappointing with how he's been pitching for the Cubs and all the hype we've been giving him over the past couple of weeks in terms of the guy for Chicago. So as the season wraps up, the Cubs are still fighting for that playoff spot. So who do we see taking over for Alzolay? Is it a committee? Who's the lead go-to guy for Cubs moving forward?
It could be some sort of committee, but if it is, I'm guessing it's going to be led by Julian Merriweather, just because he saw a save on Sunday. He kind of has been the guy when Alzolay hasn't been available that they've leaned on in the ninth inning when needed. So they trust Alzolay. I know Fulmer came in and got a save in his first game back, but that's also because Merriweather had pitched the previous three games. So I think it's Merriweather, then Fulmer, then Leiter Jr. in that order as far as who you want to add. And you know, this time of the year, even if it's only a 15-day absence, that's pretty much, you know, that might bring you to the end of the year, depending on when your season your league ends. So Merriweather, you know, worth a shot if you want to get some extra saves. And he's been pitching really well for the most part since, you know, his first week of the year. So he's definitely someone to look to add right now.
You really think Fulmer over Leiter Jr.?
I'm maybe that's just based off of the usage the other day when Leiter Jr. should have been available, but maybe he didn't pitch in that game, but he should have been available. It's kind of weird. I don't know. They seem to really like Fulmer despite him being really up, like rocky and just like very up and down this season. I don't know. They haven't really turned to Leiter. I wonder when Leiter's last save opportunity was, because he did get those chances early on, and then Alzolay took over, and I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the timing is so weird, because it did seem like Leiter and Alzolay were the two members of a closer committee for the first few months of the season, and then whenever Alzolay needed a break or he was down for a day, it would be Leiter Jr. filling in. So he does lead the team in saves outside of Alzolay. So it was really interesting to me that he set up for Merriweather in that first opportunity. And the craziest part about that, about Leiter setting up for Merriweather on that first save without Alzolay, was that was Merriweather's third day in a row pitching. So like they really forced him out there. And I think it is clear that Merriweather has been the best reliever in the bullpen. The ERA is very close, but he does trump the rest of the bullpen in strikeout rate. He's up at 33%. So that's really good. But I just that usage leads me to agree with you that Merriweather's first. But yeah, it is interesting that they went with Fulmer just coming off the IL with Leiter pitching just on one day. Like he didn't pitch multiple days in a row. So that'll be interesting. I went ahead and like picked up Leiter Jr. right away in the league that I have Alzolay, because Merriweather wasn't available. And now I'm starting to debate whether I should drop him for Fulmer, because I don't really want to hold both of them, especially if Merriweather ends up being the guy. But this is definitely a situation to watch. I feel like it's probably going to be Merriweather, just given that 3 days in a row for the save. But yeah, I don't. It's hard to tell who's the second guy here, if it's Leiter Jr. or Fulmer.
I think Leiter Jr. is at least a safer option. Neither of them get saves, maybe just Merriweather from here on out. So then if that's the case, I'd rather have Leiter Jr. anyway. So I don't disagree with rostering him over Fulmer right now.
Sure.
Yeah, monitor that situation closely. So like you said, they're gonna be in a lot of close games down the stretch. They're battling for a playoff spot, and it's been fun. They've had a very fun season. And the other closer loss from this past week is Kenley Jansen. He was placed on the COVID IL, which honestly, I kind of forgot was still a thing, because it hasn't been really reported on. We haven't heard of any cases.
I don't think we've said it once. Yeah.
And I believe someone else was just placed on it too. For
the Reds had a bunch of guys. Yeah.
Reds. Okay. Yeah. I knew it was something going on. But so, yeah, he'll be out. I believe the minimum is 7 days. So monitor that closely. We've talked about it all in the past. Who knows how long it's actually going to be, whether it's serious case, minor case, all that same stuff we talked about back in 2020 and 2021 comes back in the play here. But while the Red Sox currently are battling our Yankees, trying to not finish in the last place in the division, they're going to need to replace Jansen. He's been pretty productive in terms of saves. He hasn't been great, hasn't been terrible. Who, Rick, do you like best for the Red Sox pen for the next week or so? Because like you said, if it's a week of the season, that's about half the remaining season. Is there anybody in that Red Sox pen that's a priority add for you?
It looks like Chris Martin's going to be the guy. He was warming up today in the bottom of the eighth when the Red Sox were up 2-0, and then they went on to score 3 runs in the bottom of the inning. So Martin still pitched the ninth. He didn't get a save, but he probably will be the guy. And it could be the rest of the season. Jansen's been dealing with other things as well. I think there was speculation that it might have been something else even before we found out it was a COVID IL. So, you know, nothing to play for. And now, you know, who knows who's going to be running the ship here next season. So they might just shut him down and just, you know, they have a bunch of other arms they kind of need to evaluate here. So I think Martin really is could be a sneaky ad right now. I still like Merriweather better, but Martin is right behind him as far as, you know, these late season closer speculations go.
Yeah, he's been really good this year. He does have an ERA of 1.14 through 47 and a third innings, and that's very impressive. The strikeouts just aren't really there. I feel like Schreiber could also steal some saves from him. We have seen him get a save recently when Jansen was down, but I think Martin was still on the IL too, so that could have been a case of just the best available guy there. But yeah, the way that Martin's pitched this year, he definitely deserves the opportunity to close out some games there.
Yeah, and the Red Sox were not the only team in the AL East. We have the Underdog. We'll rack up the last couple injuries and see if anything means anything for us fantasy-wise. Jonathan Loizaga was placed on the 15-day IL with right elbow inflammation. Odds are that's the season for the Yankees. Like you said, it's a short turnaround for the remainder of the season, and he's had arm injuries early in the season. Hopefully it's nothing too severe because he is an extreme weapon for my New York Yankees. Austin Cox, season's over, sprained left ACL. And TJ Antone is placed on the 15-day IL with right elbow discomfort for the Reds. Mm-hmm. Anything to take away for any of those injuries? And anyone benefit?
I don't, you know, the Anton and Loizaga, I mean, both those injuries are, you'd hate to see it type injuries with those two guys. Yeah. Who are just like, you know, Anton just came back and
from a one and a half year absence.
Yeah. And I heard him talk in the locker room. He thinks it's nothing serious, but still it's, you just hate to see that when he just came back and started throwing again. Loizaga hasn't pitched a lot this year either. So hopefully again with him too, it's just precaution since he, you know, the Yankees don't need to run him out there right now, you know, not in the playoff chase. So, both those guys hopefully are healthy for next season.
Yeah, Loizaga had been getting a lot of holds before going on the IL. I think he racked up 5 in just 17 appearances. So he'd only been around for a month and a half or 2 months or so. So we'll probably see more holds for Tommy Conley and Wandy Peralta, and even more so because Michael King is in the rotation now. So that leaves a lot of opportunities for them, and Keenan Middleton's on the IL. So I think Conley and Peralta are going to be getting the majority of the opportunities there.
It's so weird seeing Michael King as a starter. I feel like it's what Yankee fans had like talked about all the time. It's like, oh, he has such great stuff. Put him as a starter. And it's like, no, he's been such a dominant bullpen arm. And now I actually watch him as a starter and I kind of want him to stay out there. He's got the stuff for it. So we'll see what happens going into 2024. But that's just been a lot of fun. But I would agree in terms of that, Conley and Peralta are the biggest beneficiaries. Or who knows, considering what they did in the doubleheader the other day, we could see an uptick for Anthony Mizuwitz and Zach McAllister. Misevich, excuse me. I should know how to pronounce my guys. That was the weirdest game ever, seeing those four relievers coming in and saving right. against the Boston Red Sox in September. Exactly what we predicted going into the season. A lot of transactions and just a couple of note. We'll run through those and get your fantasy impact after that. We talked about Michael Fulmer at the beginning of the show. He was activated on 15-day IL. He's going to play into this mix for the Cubs. Ben Joyce activated from 60-day IL after ulnar neuritis. Brad Boxberger also back for the Cubs after a strained right forearm. Eric Swanson activated 15-day IL for the Blue Jays. A much-needed boost to that pen as they battle for a playoff spot. And Tim Hill, activated from 15-day IL with a sprained left ring finger. So any of these injuries, any of these activations, something you're monitoring closely for fantasy? I know Fulmer's likely the biggest one because he's actually in a potential save committee, but any other ones that are worth keeping an eye on down the stretch?
I think Swanson definitely for holds leagues. He's one of the best setup man in baseball, and it's good to see him back after a very short absence. We talked about that when he went down, like what is a thoracic spine like what is that type of injury gonna look like?
Hey, we did some good research.
Yeah, so it looks like it was relatively minor, thankfully. And also good to see Ben Joyce back in, throwing 100 miles per hour again. Hopefully, you know, that's gonna be a big name to watch next year if he can stay healthy. And you know, they still have Estevez on a 1 year deal for next year, but who knows? Maybe he gets traded, and maybe that opens something up for Joyce to take over some saves.
Yeah, I hope they go easy on him because I'd like to see Joyce pitching healthy for the full season next year. I think he could be one of the top guys in that bullpen for sure. And I echo your thoughts on Swanson coming back. He is second in baseball on holds, and that's with this extended absence that he just had. So hopefully he comes back and he pitches like he was before the injury, because this guy's a super important part of that bullpen. I think the rest of them are more depth guys, but they have been out for a while. Tim Hill is quietly a solid guy in the bullpen. Did he go back on the fifth? No, that might browser's just not updating. Brad Boxberger, though, out for a while, and he's back. I remember when we were considering him for the closer role in the offseason, and boy, was that a long time ago. He tossed just 15 innings this year. But yeah, he's still kicking.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting stretch. Hopefully it works out. I'd love to, like I said, I'd love to see Ben Joyce back. And we're going to talk about one of the guys we were wrong about with Estevez, but it would not shock me at all if Joyce comes into 2024 as a sleeper closer candidate and someone that we, he could be our new guy going the next year. I have this weird feeling that he might be, maybe not our Pete Fairbanks, but another one of our late guys that we're just going for. But we're going to take a quick break and then come back with some of the risers and fallers in the ranks. Before we do so, just a reminder, as so we get to this playoff push for PL Plus and PL Pro, we're down to the final stretch. We got playoffs coming up. Everyone's looking for that edge. This is some of the most active parts in our Discord. As a reminder, with PL Plus, you get access to not only PLV, not all the other perks that come with PL Plus, but you get access to our Discord, which includes all sorts of baseball content, every single possible thing under the sun, general relief pitchers, starting pitchers, hitters, questions about anything fantasy baseball, but also fantasy football. I know, Jake, you're not a football guy. You know what I am. I am on the QB List show, but we also have a general QB, PL Plus Discord. PL Pro also includes access to the QB List portion of Discord, where we have weekly start sit discussions, trade questions. The conversations in the general chat during Sunday games is incredible. Anyone gets hurt, it's in that Discord in 30 seconds from the injury. It's insane. It's a lot of fun. So, and also it's just everything under sun, movies, TV shows, music, all of that other stuff. So if you are not part of the QB List Discord or the PL Plus Discord, I don't know what you're waiting for. It's a great community and a lot of fun. So I would definitely recommend it as you try and get the edge over your league mates over these past 2 weeks. And also, as we get closer to the end of the MLB season, Nick has been doing a lot of awesome content over on playback.tv/pitcherlist. All you gotta do is link up to your cable or MLB.tv account, and you can watch the game live with Nick or whoever he has on as a guest, and just chat football or chat not football, baseball. So it's a lot of fun. We know during the playoffs, while we might not get the Cole Reagan starts that Nick's been raving about, he'll be on there, I'm sure, fairly often, just to watch games and hang out with the fantasy baseball community. So it's a lot of fun. I'm sure he'll bring on lots of guests to talk about this stuff. So would definitely recommend checking those out as we get closer to the end of the season. Well, instead, we'll take a quick break, get back with some of our risers and fallers.
This podcast is sponsored by Underdog. Want to make money making picks on MLB games? Then you have to try Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. In Underdog's Pick'em game, you just pick your favorite baseball players and predict whether they will go higher or lower on stats like strikeouts, hits, and more. Pick the 2 to 5 players, get all your picks right, and you can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Be sure to sign up with the promo code PITCHERLIST and Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100, so you have some bonus cash to start playing with. Again, that's Underdog Fantasy. Fantasy.com or Underdog Fantasy in the App Store. Sign up with promo code PITCHERLIST and get your first deposit doubled up to $100. Must be 18 or older, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, 21 or older in Massachusetts and Arizona, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. In New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY. In Tennessee, call 1-800-889-9789.
All right, now that I'm done talking and talking about some of the latest things, let's look at our rankings of risers and fallers from the past week. Like I said, these guys are going to be possibly some difference makers over the past next week or two as the season wraps up. So, Rick, let's kick it off. Who is the biggest riser in the past week?
Yeah, I went with Tanner Scott just because it's obviously it's clear now that he's the closer there. There's no competition. David Robertson's a distant afterthought at this point. So now that Scott's got the role, I mean, he's been awesome since August. You know, he's yet to allow an earned run actually since August. As a 0.74 whip over that span, 28.1% K to walk rate, as he's really improved his command and his control and command. He's not You know, he's not walking people anymore. He's able to spot up his fastball better than he has in his career. Has five saves over the past 15 days. So yeah, it's really, now that he's closing and he's continuing to pitch as he has pitched all year, he's, you know, where did I put him? He could easily be considered a top five closer right now, I think, with just, yeah, I have him number five, because the Marlins play a lot of low scoring close games, and that benefits him. And he does have, I mean, they still have Puck and Nardi in front of him, so they're not going to blow games late. So he'll have plenty of opportunities the rest of the way. And, you know, it's definitely someone to look at for next season. You know, so if you're already out of the playoffs, looking towards 2024, Tanner Scott, I'm sure he's going to be rising up ranks like crazy, but I think right now he's probably very undervalued.
Yeah, and I think there's probably a lot of people that are just now learning about him, because yeah, he was really good for a few months before he finally took over this closer role. And we talked about him for a while, but he's been one of the best strikeout pitchers in baseball, super effective. And it's because he's cut down on the walks. That's allowed him to keep his whip down, avoid base runners when he does inevitably give up home runs or allow base hits. But he's been really dominant recently. It's crazy looking at this Marlins bullpen to see four different left-handed pitchers with strikeout rates north of 30%. That's just unheard of. I mean, lefties in general are difficult to find, let alone good lefties, let alone good strikeout lefties. So that's it's pretty crazy what the Marlins bullpen has been able to do with left-handed relievers. So I wonder if there'll be a team that'll be looking to trade this offseason. But yeah, that's beside the point. Tanner Scott's been really good this year for a long time, and now that he's the clear-cut closer, I think he's a guy you can trust. And I think everything you said about where the Marlins stand as a team and how their games are played, their low-scoring offense, it's going to be tight games. I think that gives them plenty of opportunities down the stretch here.
I feel like we've been talking about the Marlins making a trade with pitching for the past 10 years. Ben, that's never happened. I hope they do it, because we want the Marlins to be good, but I'm going to believe him. See, yeah, he's very good, and he'll continue to rise up. He overtook AJ Puck, and it's well deserved. So, Jake, over to you. Who is your biggest riser from the past week?
I'm bringing Alex Lang back. It's been a weird last couple months. He really struggled for a while, mostly with his command. Just started walking the whole world, and he started to drop off, and then he eventually lost the closer role, but it was for a very short period of time. It was like a week, maybe two, that he didn't have the closer role. And that whole time, Jason Foley was out on the IL until the very end. So there was never really like a clear closer for a while. And then I started getting in on all the Jason Foley shares. I think I got him in a couple leagues. And then as soon as I did that, he stopped being the closer. Alex Lang got put back in there, finally figured things out in terms of his, in terms of the walks. I mean, they're still pretty prevalent, but he's been able to work around them somewhat since he started off August like terribly. He had three straight appearances where he walked at least three batters. But if you go to like mid-August, from the August 16th through the middle of September, he's walked just five guys in 13 innings. That's a huge improvement. The strikeouts aren't really there, but you can see it in the results. He's got a 2.08 ERA in that time. He does have six saves. So it looks like not only has he gotten the walks in check, he's got his control back under control, but he also is getting those save opportunities, which is what you hope to have in a guy that's playing for a team that's as bad as the Tigers. But yeah, it looks like Alex Lang is back.
Yeah, since Foley's last save, he's got six. He has six saves of for himself, Lang. So they're trusting him down the stretch, which is great to see. And yeah, walks are still a little bit of an issue. But even, you know, over that that stretch where, you know, since Foley's last save, Lang has an ERA of 2.61, WHIP of 1.06. So you know, it's fine. We'll definitely take that. And the strikeouts are still there. They're still, you know, at least striking out a guy per game pretty much. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see it. Where he falls kind of in ADP for next season, because there's a ton of upside there. One of the more high risk, high reward closer options, I feel. But, you know, it's good to see. Hopefully he ends the season on a high note, and, you know, we don't really have too much talk next season as to, you know, who's going to be closing games, him or Jason Foley. Because I think Foley, you know, he's pitched great this year, but he doesn't strike anyone out. So that kind of that limits the excitement for me when it comes to like talking about closers. I want someone who can rack up saves as well. Or K's.
Yeah, he's been very... It's nice to see him back because we were kind of... You know, at the beginning of the season, he was awesome. When he fell off and Foley was taking it over, it's good to get him back into this track. And knowing the Tigers, who the heck knows what's going to happen going to 2024, but he's become someone you can rely on down the stretch as the Tigers continue to battle for just, you know, the respect at the end of the season. So, the final guy I want to bring up, and it's not too much more to add from him because he's really hasn't lost his job all season, but Dave Bednar, he's picked up a couple saves since we've last spoken, and there's no competition. It's just a reminder that Dave Bednar is still very good, who moved up 4 spots up to 12 in Rick's ranks. Same thing with Tigers. The Pirates are playing a little bit more respectable ball down the stretch here, and just a reminder that David Bednar is still very, very good.
Yeah, I was kind of was a little bit concerned at the end of August, thinking maybe, you know, Bednar had slowed down a little bit. Maybe they would shut him down early just to limit his innings. But he had a huge week last week and still throwing the ball well. So, yeah, he should be. It looks like at this point he should be able to finish the season strong.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that has him rising up is that he's just racking up the saves like crazy. Yeah. We talked sort of a little bit a couple weeks ago about Azulai leading the majors in saves in the second half, but David Bednar has come out of nowhere, surpassed both him and Kyle Finnegan, and he now leads by 2. He's got 17 saves since the All-Star break. Oof. Next is Azulai with 15, and then Finnegan with 14, and Azulai's now on the IL. So it looks like Bednar might be able to run away with the league lead in the second half in saves. There is a little bit of concern with his performance. His ERA has jumped from 1.27 in the first half to 2.81. The strikeouts haven't been as good either. He fell from 29.8%, just about 30%, to 24.5%, and his walk rate has doubled. So I think the peripherals and the results have not been as good, but because he's making up for that with tons of saves, I think you got to be pretty happy with the success that Bednar has been having in the second half here.
And with the risers, we got to go over to some of these fallers from the past week, and these might be the more interesting ones to talk about as we get towards, like I said, this middle of September, only a couple of weeks left in the season, and see how concerned we actually are. And we'll start with you again, Rick. Who's someone you're getting concerned about over this this final stretch of the season?
I'll talk about Yennier Cano, because it really, you know, it started off, he was having a great August, and really I was kind of buying into like, oh, maybe he's back to his early season ways of just being a dominant reliever who doesn't strike out a ton of guys, but, you know, gets a lot of weak contact and whatnot. But September has certainly been a different story for Cano. And, you know, I wonder now, it looks like Felix Bautista might have a chance to return here. So that hurts Cano's value a little bit. He is lucky. I mean, Fujinami hasn't pitched. He's been all right, but he hasn't really done anything to take the job away from Cano. So I think Cano is safe for now, but it's, you know, I don't think he's a top 20 option the rest of the way. I think he's, you know, more of a desperation back end, you know, I need saves to finish off the year type option, because there's some flaws here that are starting to show.
And that's crazy to say, given how good he was to start the year and how good the Orioles are this year, how many opportunities they're going to be giving him. But I mean, you were right about how good he was in August. He did not give up a single earned run in the month of August across 12 innings. He also walked just one batter while striking out 12. And then in September, he's already given up 4 earned runs in 3 appearances. He has not struck out a batter across those 3 innings as well. So definitely concerning, especially from a guy who looked like he was finally figuring out the strikeouts again in August. But yeah, I mean, the lack of competition there is likely helping him hold on to that closer role. But yeah, it'd be awesome to see Felix Bautista come back, not to get Cano out of that closer role, but just because I feel like really boosts the Orioles' chances in the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm all for the back end of the bullpen having Bautista back and seeing that entrance in October. Like, that would be absolutely awesome seeing October baseball in Baltimore.
Speaking of music, speaking of entrances, have you guys seen Yoan Duran's entrance in Minnesota yet?
That's right up there as one of the better ones too. I think I still prefer Bautista's, but
yeah, for sure.
Duran definitely is cool. It's fun. Weird from being a Yankee fan. Clay Holmes doesn't have any fun. And just having Clay Holmes walk out just be like exciting, because it also makes you have a heart attack almost every single time. But
just do Enter Sandman. I don't think anybody's used that one before.
No. Who's the Sandman? But I thought that was just something about your dreams. But Jake, we'll move over to you. Who was your faller from the last week?
I'll take Josh Hader. He has been really, really good this year. He's got a 1.29 ERA, a strikeout rate of 39%, one of the best relievers in baseball this year. But it seems like luck is finally going the other way. His workload has been pretty low this year, so we haven't really seen too much of him. He's tossed just 48 innings this year, which is crazy because Felix Bautista, who's been out for a month, is like over 60. So that might give you a better idea there. But it seems like Hader is finally becoming not invincible. Hitters can touch him now. There was a long period of time where nobody was doing anything against him. Prior to August 30th, he had not given up a run since June 7th. He had not given up a run since May. That was the last time he gave up an earned run. May 31st, he gave up two earned runs. He did not give up another earned run until August 30th. That's a 3 month timeline where he did not surrender a run. Pretty wild stuff that he was doing there. So that's like 24 innings. Looks like 23 and two thirds innings where he was unscored upon in the earned run department. So that's pretty wild. And then he followed up those two earned runs that he gave up on August 30th with one more on 9/11. So it seems like he's not invincible anymore. He's still going to be really great, but I think the lack of usage, the way that the Padres have been playing recently, and the fact that now he looks a little bit touchable, I think knocks him down a little bit, because it seems like he is human after all. And we do have to keep in the back of our mind that he didn't have that blow up month that he is so used to having either in July or August that Rick is very famous for pointing out. And he has yet to have that. So maybe that's happening in September.
Okay, it could be happening in September, except he's only pitched twice. And you know, I forget who it was I was looking at, but there's some relievers that are already at like 11 innings in September. So yeah, he's only at two. He only had 6.2 innings in August as well. So it's 8.2 innings since August began. He has two saves since August 2nd. Two saves. So I know it's hard to predict saves, but that's, you know, is what's the point of having a closer if you're not getting saves? I mean, he can help ratios and strikeouts all you want, but he doesn't, if he's not getting saves, he can't be in the top five right now. So I only moved him down a little bit because, yeah, he's still had a really great season and he's going to get paid a ton this offseason and probably deservingly so. But I don't know what the Padres are doing. Maybe they're just kind of giving them the month off and, you know, hey, good luck in free agency.
They probably saw what happened to Shohei and they were just like, we do not want that to happen to you.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's just weird that he doesn't even pitch in, you know, these, even if it's not a safe situation, you still see closers pitching. It's weird. Either something's wrong or they're just, I don't know, the Padres have just completely moved on from him at this point.
I think that's just the definition of the Padres at this point. I don't know what's going on.
That's a good point.
Such a disappointing season for them.
All the way around, yeah.
I'm very curious what's going to happen with Josh Hader. We know the Padres are good with spending money on anybody, but I'm wondering if Hader is going to be that exception, especially how they're using him right now. But yeah. Monitor that situation. He'll get paid handsomely, but I'm curious where he'll end up for next season. But the reliever I want to mention as a faller is Andrés Muñoz, and I feel like every week lately we've been talking him up, talking him down, talking him up, and now he's down again. Now, he did pitch on Wednesday, pick up the save. He did pitch, I believe, on Monday and pick up a save as well, but he was dealing with a hip injury that kept him out over the weekend. So I know there's a, Rick, you do have some concerns about Muñoz at this point, just with the continuing moving up and down, but it's just a reminder to keep an eye on this. The Mariners have, throughout the season, throughout the recent memory, used a committee approach. So I wonder, with the slight injury to Munoz that kept him out over the weekend, do they go back to that committee again?
It looks like he's fine. It's good to see him get that save yesterday. But it's just, yeah, he's been yo-yoing up and down the list recently. But I think it's like, you know, Matt Brash has been pitching really, really well recently as well. So, yeah, and like you said, like, Seattle has gone with the committee. And even if you, you know, some of their beat writers will be the first to say, like, there is no closer. It's, you know, that's a committee approach here. So I still think, you know, Munoz is option 1A, but Brash still, I'm sure Brash will still get some saves the rest of the way, and does limit Munoz's value. And just the injury, just because he's only thrown 43.2 innings this year, he is, you know, injury prone. He's missed time already. So it's just a little, you know, you never want to see something like that. Like, things like that, it could definitely linger. And, you know, all of a sudden, maybe next week, he gets up and throws in the bullpen and it's stiff again, and then he's not available. So, yeah, it's, you know, I just think he's too risky to kind of put him in the top 10 or 12 right now.
Yeah, that's fair. And he did struggle to start September, but with the presence of Brash, and then also with them on the way to the postseason and definitely wanting to save him for that, I think they'll definitely go easy on him so that they can have a fully healthy, strong bullpen once they get into October.
Let's take one final break, and then we'll get to keep going with our sadness of followers and talk about guys we were wrong about in this season. See if there's any lessons we can take away going to 2024. But take a look at that when we get back. All right, like we talked about last week, we were right on a fair amount of guys. We had predictions were good. I'm fairly proud of the success rate we had, but of course there were some guys who. We're going to own up to it. We're not perfect. I know I like to believe I am at times, but our predictions aren't always right, as seen by me predicting the Yankees to win the American League East and all of us predicting the San Diego Padres to win the National League West. We're not going to get everything right, and it's very, very disappointing. So we'll look at some of the biggest whiffs on the season, try and see, like I said, if there's anything we can take away. And Jake, I'm going to let you kick it off. Because you know, you've liked to go on the victory lap once in a while, so we'll humble you, let you bring yourself back to the light. Who's one of your biggest, or even us as a show, who's do you think's one of our biggest whiffs from the season?
I mean, I don't know if this was my biggest one, but I will start with Trevor May just because he's at the top of the list. That one's an interesting one, because if you look at the numbers, I he's been pretty solid for fantasy terms. He's got a 3.61 ERA. He's got 19 saves. He's on the worst team in baseball and he's still doing that. I mean, how can you, be mad about that? But, you know, I feel like that beside the, him being on the IL with mental health issues, the 18% strikeout rate, the fact that he just walks every single person in the world, definitely makes it feel like it was somebody I was wrong about. I felt like he could be like a real sleeper, get back to being old Trevor May and be like a legitimately good closer for this team in the first half and then get traded. But not only did he not get traded, but he also didn't get back to being old Trevor May. I think he's been really lucky with that 3.61 ERA, and the 19 saves are only because there's literally nobody else in that bullpen. So I do feel wrong about Trevor May getting back to being his old, was he ever an all-star? Old self. But I don't feel bad that he did. He probably will reach the 20 saves threshold with a sub-4 ERA. I feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, he's been terrible this year, but he's been okay from a fantasy perspective, because 20 saves, he'll definitely get to 20 saves, or he should get to 20 saves, and a 3.61 ERA won't kill you. But yeah, the 18% K rate to 15% walk rate is very ugly. You know, not someone to look forward to next year for sure, but I mean, 20 saves is 20 saves, I guess. If you're in like a deep roto league, you'll take that.
Like, post pick 300.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like we were saying like, I'll take this guy over, you know, Emmanuel Clase. It's, you know, mm-hmm. you know, lay around darts. And he, you know, there were better ones for sure, but May is a tough one. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like you said, it's hard. You were saying about to say definitely, and I was gonna say you probably can't make any definitive statements about the Oakland Athletics, because let's face it, there's not too much we can predict about this team, but it's nice to know we got the save leader on that. He's been up and down. You know, I think you said it best. It wasn't a horrible call. There probably were some better late round darts we can take, but 20 saves is not a bad amount for a guy you've got past pick 300. But Rick, I'll let you get your turn in here. Where else do you think you know, there's something else we could take away from this season in terms of guys we got wrong?
I'll continue on with the next guy on the list. Let's say Ronaldo Lopez, because we started to buy into that hype right away. And, you know, it's another one where it's like, yeah, we were wrong about him from a saves aspect. You know, he lost the job in Chicago relatively early on in the season, but he has been pitching really well lately. I mean, no one's probably held on to him for this long, but he has turned things around, and he is someone who may not so much, but Lopez is someone I'm very interested to see where he lands this offseason, if he can find himself on a team where save opportunities are, you know, available. He's really turned things. It's really since he left Chicago, and you know, he's been pitching really well Cleveland after a short stint in LA. He's been on three teams in a month, but he's you know, the velocity ticked up this year. That's what got us all excited, but he still had command issues early on, and he was letting up a ton of home runs, and he's fixed both. I don't want to say fixed, but he's definitely alleviated both those problems, and the walks though aren't as bad as they were early on in the season, and he's not giving up, you know, home runs every game. So he's looked better lately, but yeah, definitely disappointing from, you know, only having six saves on the year.
Mm-hmm. I feel like he's probably going to go to whichever team Lucas Giolito goes to, since they're always on same team.
That's crazy.
But yeah, I feel like this one was definitely like one of the clearest ones that we got wrong, but I feel like the process wasn't wrong. Like, we identified a guy that had opportunity that wasn't like going super highly in drafts, and that he made improvements over the offseason to his fastball velocity, changed his slider grip, and seemed like a guy that was on the rise because he was so good over the last two seasons. And so I think the process was there. I think that's a good way that you can go about identifying a guy. And I think we just missed. I mean, just think about the feelings that we had in the opening day podcast when he came in and he was throwing 100 miles per hour. Like, it felt like we were so right. It felt like everything was coming together. And then while that didn't really last the whole season because he made all these improvements in favor of walking a ton of guys, which was really detrimental to his season. And after being a guy who didn't walk anybody, he became a guy who couldn't really control his pitches and never really got the opportunity to save games. But I feel like the process was there. But then, I mean, in tandem with Lopez being wrong on Lopez meant we were wrong on Kendall Graveman, because he was the guy that we were saying, you know, avoid him because Lopez is going to be the guy. And we're like all 100% sure about that. And then Graveman ended up being the guy for a while there in Chicago before landing in Houston, where he's been pretty solid with Chicago. He had a 3.48 ERA and he had eight saves. It wasn't a lot of saves, but I mean, it was there. He was the closer most of the time. And then he's been very good in Houston, 3.12 ERA. The strikeout rate has ticked up nearly 5%. So I don't feel bad about being wrong about Kendall Graveman, but they do sort of go in tandem there.
Yeah. I'll jump in here and go for a guy that all three of us have loved. All three of us. We got the Pete Fairbanks. We'll give ourselves credit for another guy we've been loving and waiting to take over as closer that just never really panned out. And it's Hunter Harvey, in my mind, is a, I would say, a huge whiff, because it's saves for the Nationals. Yippee, you're taking in a pick up 4-something, 5-something in some drafts. But, you know, it, maybe it goes also to being wrong about Kyle Finnegan. But and we took the chance on a guy who just, you know, has a hard throwing fastball on a bad team. And it's maybe just a reminder in some sense to, you know, you could throw the darts, but just, you know, keep an eye out for those injured guys. You know, Harvey's handled some injuries this season. He did set a new career high in appearances, and he still has looked good. Like, I'm excited to see what he can do if he can stay healthy. I maybe will fall into that trap again, but Hunter Harvey's one that I wanted to point out as a, just based on his injury past and something like that. You know, maybe we could take something away from that with.
Yeah, I mean, Harvey is just like, if he's healthy, he's gonna be good. He's a good pitcher when he's healthy. It's just hard to predict that with him. I think Finnegan on the flip side of that, 25 saves, 3.11 ERA. 7 wins. I mean, that's someone I think that might be one of our bigger misses. And
yeah,
again, I feel like that's going to happen once or twice a year, at least at the very bare minimum. You're going to have a guy who, and let's be honest, I think Finnegan's overachieving right now. I think, you know, we could see a big, decline from him next season. And maybe Harvey ends up closing most games the more, you know, getting the most saves for that team next year. So, but for this season, yeah, Finnegan, I mean, he went on our huge run in the middle of the year. He started the year off horribly, then went on this massive like stretch of dominance where he wasn't striking out a ton of guys, but he doesn't give up a ton of free bags, and he was getting a little bit lucky with where the hard contact was going. So, you know, it worked out. 25 saves, again, that's, you know, we'll definitely take that with where he was drafted, which I want to say he was in like the early 200s ADP, something like that. So I mean, yeah, I think you take that where he was going. And yeah, I definitely wasn't on board in drafts, but I'll take that loss. I'm not really, I don't think that should kill your teams in any format, really.
No, I mean, this one's really a mixed bag, because like you do, it is clear that Finnegan was the correct choice here, but it's not like we were wrong in taking Harvey. He did have 10 saves. He did get 17 holds. Yeah. If you're in a holds league, he does have a 2.89 ERA and a 29% strikeout rate. All of that is really good. All of that is somebody that honestly might even be worth drafting where he was taken. If there was a guy that you were guaranteed would have a sub 3 ERA and near 30% strikeout rate and 10 saves after pick like 350, I feel like that's a guy I would draft. It just sucks that it felt like we were so close to being right when he was taking over that closer role, and then he got injured, and then he just lost it for the rest of the year. But I feel like Finnegan is the one putting salt in the wounds, because if it was just like there wasn't anybody else there that was like clearly the closer, and Harvey just never really got the chance because of the injury when he was just about to take the closer role, I feel like we would feel pretty good about this one. But the fact that Finnegan was in that same bullpen and was a guy that we were sort of avoiding because we were like, Hunter Harvey's just better, definitely makes that one hurt a lot more. But I feel like we weren't technically wrong about Harvey. I think that was a good draft pick super late in drafts to get you 10 saves and a sub 3 ERA.
Yeah, I think you put it in a good perspective, and not like Rick said, it probably stings more because we were wrong on Finnegan. But just like you said, he's so overachieving that I feel like Finnegan's going to end up once again going to 2024 as one of our bigger fades, depending on where, obviously ADP,
yeah,
but
yeah,
just, you know, the saves, it seems like it's gonna be an easy avoid. But so we may be having this conversation again a year from now. But we'll go back over to you, Jake. Let's keep this train going. Let's keep going. Somebody who you feel we were wrong about this season.
All right. Well, I'll take the L on Michael Fulmer. This was a guy that I was pumping up for a while in the offseason, just because there was really no clear guy in that Chicago bullpen. It was sort of the Brandon Hughes show, and I was really against that because the Cubs didn't have any other lefties in that bullpen, so I felt like it would be weird to use him as their closer. And then everybody else in that bullpen was either unproven or unknown, and then they signed Michael Fulmer, and I got really pumped about him because he had been a closer in the past. It seemed like he was making some changes in the offseason with the Cubs, and he looked really good in spring training. So I started to hype him up. He was going really late in drafts. I got him in a couple places, and it just really didn't pan out. He only had 2 saves, 4.42 ERA. The strikeouts went up, but he really hasn't been the guy that we wanted him to be. Though I do feel good that I came off that train really quickly. I got off the train and I went straight to Albert Alzolay, and that was the correct choice there. It took a while to come through, and he obviously did end up getting injured at the end of the year, but he did make up for that with 22 saves and a 2.71 ERA. So while Fulmer was definitely one of my clearest L's on the season, I feel like I made up for it by really quickly transferring my love to Alzolay.
Yeah, I think we all, I mean, I'm surprised none of us, I know we did talk about Alzolay. I think none of us predicted that Alzolay would be getting saves as quickly as he did. I think we were all like, he'll probably be like a, you know, a bridge guy, you know, since he's a starter turn reliever, someone who comes in early in the games. But yeah, I think we were kind of on Alzolay, just not in the closer role. And yeah, Fulmer did make the most sense. I don't know why. I'm not really sure why I picked Julian Merriweather to lead the team in saves at the beginning of the season, but I guess he's had a good year. So
bold prediction.
Cool. Yeah, I guess he's, I mean, it's just like my, I mean, Arizona, I had Kevin Ginkle, and he's the 65th best player in Yahoo right now. So,
all right. Yeah.
9-0, baby.
We just had the victory lap episode.
I just got to take one more. I know, one more. And then we're going to go back to, yeah. But yeah, Fulmer is another, I wonder, he's another guy who probably gets, he could get a chance at closing out games next season. He's going to be a free agent again. He does have a little bit of history doing it. And again, he started off okay. It's been a bit of a roller coaster for him. But yeah, I understand where we're coming from as far as he goes with his skill set. And it's going to be another one who I don't know if he's going to be a tease for us next year or if he's going to like finally break through.
Let's hope it's the other way around. But
yeah.
Yeah, I was on the same train for Michael Fulmer. He was my prediction to lead the Cubs in saves, and process was there. But I think the lesson I'm taking out of that is like Jake said, be ready to pivot quickly. You know, we had our inclinations and probably, again, waited too long to jump on Alzolay or jump on. I definitely was guilty of this. I was, even when you guys were saying, hey, it might be Alzolay, I was still just like, I don't know if I want to buy into this or spend fab on him. But yeah, it's just something I'm going to take into next season is be very water when it comes to that stuff and make the pivots very, very quickly. Any other, you know, whiffs that you want to throw out there at this point?
Well, let's see. Yeah, I mean, I guess the whole Rangers closing situation where we weren't exactly like ramping up Jose Leclerc, and I've been a huge Leclerc guy in the past. He's been one of my favorite options and for like middle to late rounds in years past. But this year I was a little bit more skeptical, even though I thought he had, you know, like looking at that bullpen going into the season, I didn't have any faith in Will Smith. And that's another one we were wrong on, or I was wrong on at least.
I thought we did good when Will Smith was signed to be like,
we mentioned
to make
it,
that connection to between Bruce Bochy. Because I did not consider that at all. And you guys, as a Giants fan, I feel like I should have been the one to notice that. But you guys were ahead of me on that. And I feel like just mentioning that gave that slight inkling that, oh, like maybe if Will Smith does get a save early on, then buy into it really quickly. But we definitely weren't like preseason, like, okay, we're totally buying into our conspiracy theory that Bruce Bochy is going to make Will Smith the closer, and then Leclerc just really wasn't there. I think we were all on the Leclerc train. While he hasn't been terrible, he really has not been like a saves plus holds guy. 7 on the season, despite tossing 48 innings. That's very underwhelming. 27% strikeout rate, 3.17 ERA is not bad, but Will Smith was definitely the clear choice here, even though he's fallen off and he's not a big strikeout guy, 25%. He does have 22 saves, 7 holds. That's really valuable. And if we had been on that earlier, I think that would have been a huge dub for us. But you know, it was a really difficult one to buy in on, and it was sort of just like that inkling of like personal relationships between a manager and a former player, and that's something that's really difficult to lean into. So I don't know if that's something that you can really learn from there, but it's, you know, sometimes you just got to trust your gut on something like that.
Yeah. And so we'll keep up with the committee approach. And I want to talk about the Philadelphia Phillies, where we had the full committee of 2024, of 2023, excuse me, of who's it going to be? Sir Anthony Dominguez, Jose Alvarado, Gregory Soto, Craig Kimbrell. And I know when we predicted it, it was back and forth. It was a lot of Sir Anthony Dominguez talk. And somebody on this show, since I wasn't on last week's Toot Your Horn episode, I'm going to say I predicted Craig Kimbrell to lead the team in saves. Excuse me. but what I'll say is we were definitely wrong about Sir Anthony Dominguez. And the lesson I'd want to take away from this is when it comes to the committee approach, sometimes you want to take the veteran guy who's done it before, But then you go further down the list, then there's the veteran guy that's done it before that hasn't exactly panned out. So it's and Daniel Hudson, who I think all three of us were pretty on of a, hey, when he comes back, he could be the closer for Los Angeles Dodgers. So I'm very confused in terms of how to try and approach that next season. And maybe it's just sort of a general topic rather than just guys were wrong about. So, but if you guys want to weigh in on that in terms of a, hey, we were wrong about Sir Anthony Dominguez, or most of us, but me, but also we were wrong about Daniel Hudson and how we, how we approach those sorts of battles going forward.
Yeah, I mean, with the, like you talk about, like veteran relievers, it's really, it's hard. They're the harder ones to predict sometimes, you know, because, you know, sometimes they go Craig Kimbrell, you know, they could still have something left in the tank. And sometimes it's, you know, it's Daniel Hudson where he just can't, you know, get over an injury and stay on the field. So, yeah, I mean, Kimbrell, it's you know, even with Will Smith, I think both Kimbrell and Smith, both being, you know, older veterans, they do seem to be breaking down a little bit the second half of the year. I mean, Smith's value kind of ended at the end of July, and Kimbrell's still closing out games, but he hasn't been as dominant as he was to begin the year, but still definitely a great, you know, great value pick, especially, you know, where he was going in drafts, because yeah, there was a lot of Sir Anthony hype and Alvarado hype, which, you know, Alvarado, if he stays healthy, probably was the guy here, but got to give it up to Kimbrell for you know, having a great season, even, you know, even though there's been some struggles recently.
Yeah, it's really hard to take anything from either of these. I mean, someone like Hudson, I you guys both said that he would lead the team in saves, but I mean, it's difficult because you can say like, oh, don't buy into a guy that's like injured to start the year, and then you would have missed out on both Felix Bautista and Raisel Iglesias. So it's like, that's not really something that you can take in a next season. So that's sort of just one that really sucks. And I doubt you guys were even drafting Daniel Hudson anyway, just being ready for him to get activated off the IL. So, I mean, maybe you had spent a lot of fab when he finally got activated, but yeah, that's not a, not really one you can learn from. And the Philly situation was just so unique. Rarely do you see four different guys that could be a closer or have been closers in the past, in the recent past, and with little inclination as to who might be the guy there. And especially with the histories that each of these guys had, like you have Dominguez, who looks like he's back to being the like prospect closer that he was in 2022 prior to being injured. And then Jose Alvarado, who looked like he was finally figuring things out as a member of the Phillies, and Gregory Soto, who was an all-star closer for 2 years. And then Craig Kimbrell, who's a Hall of Fame closer, who looked like he was washed. And really hard to take that group of guys and be like, I'm going to like put all my money on one of them and feel good about it. So like, I don't know what to take from that one either. I guess you could have gone the way of, you know, I'm going to spread out my money and then get a few of them. But I, there's a possibility you go Alvarado, Soto, and Dominguez, and you still miss out on the guy, right? So it's really difficult situation there. And I really don't think there's anything to take from it, because it's either you got it. It's like a coin flip. Like, you either got it right or you didn't, or you didn't buy into it because it was such a murky situation, muddy situation. But yeah, I think both of those are really weird ones to learn from in terms of L's.
No, you're definitely right there. And you know, I'm sure we'll have a much more in-depth topic or discussion about that going in the off season. But it's just something that, as we're looking through these, I wanted to think about, and this is how we could approach that next season. Anybody else you guys want to highlight in terms of some of the biggest losses for the season?
Yeah, I mean, just good that you brought up Hudson, because Hudson was one, yeah, that I was, you know, upset about. And it's, you know, Phillips has been great, so I don't think Hudson was ever going to really get a chance to close out games. But it was just weird how, like, in February and March, it's like, all right, Hudson's probably going to be, he has a chance to be back opening day. And then it's like, oh, he's probably going to miss 2 weeks. And then it just kept getting delayed and delayed and delayed. And then he comes back and gets hurt again. And it was just like, all right, this isn't going to happen this year. And you feel bad for the guy, because he was really underrated last season before he blew out his ACL. I mean, it's just at that age, it's tough to, you know, tough to come back from certain injuries, I guess.
No, that's very true. Jake, anything else you want to highlight with that?
Don't know if my audio is working. I can't get it to connect to my ear. But perfect. Anyway, I think Carlos Hernandez is a big one. Mm-hmm. We were pretty hyped about him. I think that one was fair, given that his stuff was really showing out, but really didn't work out with how bad the Royals were and with the sort of status of him being pretty unlucky throughout the year. But I still feel good about that one. And I think that's somebody that I might be getting late in drafts next year.
Definitely. And it's just reminder to keep that. Of course, we'll have a whole big discussion on all these guys even more as we get the off season throughout the rest of the season and lessons to take away. But this is a good, good thought exercise, something that I've hadn't put a lot of thought into for the season, but definitely something that is nice to think about as we wrap things up here. But that's gonna do it for this episode of In the Pen. As always, we discussed at the beginning of the show, but you can find us all in Discord, in PL Plus, as we try and wrap up the season and make those small little adjustments to help you get a fantasy baseball championship. But you can always find our articles at pitcherlist.com. Guys, as always, plug where you can be found on Twitter, any upcoming work as we push people towards those pitcherless championships.
You can find me on Twitter at I am Rick Graham. And just a couple more weeks, plugging away rankings of closers and setup men. So looking forward to seeing how the rest of the season plays out, and then getting right into the off season grind and seeing where people will rank on the early rankings for next season.
Yeah, and you can follow me at Jake Crumpler on Twitter. All of my work can be found on crumplerbaseball.com. It really needs to be updated, but I do the weekend editions of the First Pitch podcast, which is Pitcherless daily podcast. It'll be running right through the end of the year. And I also do my personal podcast called Free Baseball, which you can find on my Twitter or on at Athletes Hub, on their Facebook page, The Athletes Hub, or on YouTube, The Athletes Hub. So it's a fun podcast. I also put out articles every week and write for Baseball HQ.
Yeah, he's got the full resume. You find me at Callen_Elsliger, hosting the show, hanging out in Discord, just trying to find those small things. I'm not as active in terms of the writing, but I will be around and trying to win my championships and help those who are those who need to get their championship. So excited for this final stretch. It's weird watching September baseball and it not mattering for the Yankees and Red Sox, but we'll find some ways and we'll make these the last few weeks count. But it's gonna be an exciting stretch. Those wild card races are nuts and I can't wait to see how they end up, but we still got plenty of time and there's a lot of things that are going to change over this past week and over this next week. And I'm sure next week we'll have a whole bunch of new guys to break down for the rest of the season. But that's going to do it for this episode of In the Pen, and we will talk to you next week.